Here we go. So tonight we're starting a new topic. And don't know how long this will take us, but it will be about the mystery that was revealed to the apostles and prophets in the first century, a secret that God had kept hidden for ages and from generations, and then finally revealed when it was the appropriate time. So it talks about this mystery in Ephesians 3, and we're going to start there. So if you go to Ephesians 3, in verse 1, it says, "For this cause I, Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ for you Gentiles, if you have heard of the dispensation of the grace of God, which is given me to youward, how that by revelation he made known unto me the mystery, as I wrote afore in few words, whereby when you read you may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ, which in other ages was not made known unto the sons of men, as it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs and of the same body and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel, whereof I was made a minister according to the gift of the grace of God given unto me by the effectual working of his power, unto me who am less than the least of all saints, is this grace given that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the world hath been hid in God, who created all things." The words "by Jesus Christ" do not appear in the critical Greek texts. "To the intent that now unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places might be known by the church the manifold wisdom of God, according to the eternal purpose which he purposed in Christ Jesus our Lord, in whom we have boldness and access with confidence by the faith of him." So we will be going back to this section, not this evening, but probably next week. But this is where the mystery is really spelled out. But we're going to be looking at this and picking it apart and seeing what he wrote afore in a few words. We're going to look at what he wrote afore so that we can understand his knowledge in the mystery of Christ. Okay? Because that is available to us. So there's a few questions that I came up with initially to start this study, and I'll share those questions with you regarding the mystery that has been revealed. First is, what is the meaning of the word that's translated mystery? We'll take a look at that. And are there other examples of God hiding and revealing things? We'll take a look at that this evening. And then when it comes to the mystery of Christ that was mentioned, how is the mystery of Christ defined? When and to whom was the mystery first revealed? Why was the mystery kept secret? What information is included in the mystery and what is not included in the mystery? And then what does the mystery mean to us? How does it impact our personal lives? So, let's take a look at this word that's translated mystery here in verse 3. It's the Greek word mysterion. So when you click on a word here in ESORT, it gives you the Strong's number. So if you have a Strong's concordance, you could look it up there and see every place where that word is used in the Bible and also get a definition of what that word means. In ESORT, it does this for you electronically, so you don't have to lug out all the heavy books. But it's good to know how to use the books, too. And then it gives you the word in the Greek letters. So if you knew Greek, you could just pronounce this as mysterion. But if you don't know Greek, it gives you the Greek letters in the English form. Okay, it's called transliterated, where they take each letter and substitute, like this is the letter mu, which corresponds to the English letter M. And that would be a U, that would be an upsilon is the way they say it. That would be our U. Sigma would be our S. Tau is T. That's eta, which translates to a long E, so giving you the A sound. Rho is R. I is iota. That's a short O called omicron, so we put an O there without the long mark. And that looks like a V, but it's the letter nu, which translates to our N. So mysterion would be the word. It tells you that there are 27 places in the King James Bible where this is used, and it's translated mystery 22 times and mysteries in the plural 5 times. Okay, most of them are in the epistles and is regarding this mystery of Christ that we saw. But there are some places in the Gospels and the book of Revelation where it's used as well, where it talks about other things. Now, this will give you the Strong's definition. Like if you looked in the back of the Strong's Concordance, there's a lexicon there where the Greek words are defined. It also does that for the Hebrew words. So again, it gives you the Greek letters, mysterion, the English transliteration, mysterion, and how to pronounce it, mysterion, and says it's from a derivative of the Greek word muo, which means to shut the mouth. And it's a secret or mystery through the idea of silence imposed by initiation into religious rites. And it's always translated mystery. But it's the idea of shutting the mouth, something that's not spoken, something that's kept secret because it exists, but it's not spoken, it's not revealed. Now, there's another Greek lexicon called the Thayer Greek Lexicon, and that gives us a definition, or actually a number of definitions. The first is a hidden thing, a secret, a mystery. And then 1A, a subset of that definition, generally mysteries, religious secrets confided only to the initiated and not to ordinary mortals. 1B is a hidden or secret thing not obvious to the understanding. Okay. 1C is a hidden purpose or counsel. So one person or a group of people might decide what they're going to do, but they don't tell anybody else. Subset of that is a secret will, which could be of men, or it could be of God, the secret counsels which govern God in dealing with the righteous, which are hidden from the ungodly and wicked men, but plain to the godly. So God can decide who he's going to reveal something to and who he's going to hide something from. In rabbinic writings, that means the writings of the Jewish rabbis, it denotes the mystic or hidden sense of an Old Testament saying, or of an image or form seen in a vision, or of a dream. So maybe someone had a dream, but the meaning of the dream is hidden from that person, right? So those are all the different definitions. The main thing to know about this word is that it's something that's hidden, something that's not spoken, like a secret. And it's used in Matthew 13, and I would like to go to Matthew 13. In verse 11, Jesus Christ said this to his disciples. He said, he answered and said unto them, because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. The context of this is Jesus Christ had spent some time teaching multitudes of people who had gathered around because they were curious. They wanted to see the miracles that he was doing. And he spoke to the crowd, but he spoke to them in parables. He spoke to them in stories. And he didn't explain these parables to the multitude. So most of them probably went away thinking, well, that was an interesting discussion about agriculture and stuff like that, but I don't really know what he was getting at. But the ones that stayed after, his disciples, his students that traveled with him, they came after and said in verse 10, the disciples came and said unto him, why speakest thou unto them in parables? Why are you doing that, Lord? Nobody understands what you're talking about. And his reply is, he answered and said unto them, because it is given unto you. Who's the you? The disciples, the one who came around afterwards to ask him. It is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Now, it might be good to note that this is not regarding the mystery that the Apostle Paul is talking about, because it says it was given unto them to know, and it was at the time before the great mystery regarding the church was revealed. So he's talking about other mysteries. And he said, "For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away even that he hath. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand." I mean, Jesus was there in person, right? They could all see him, and they saw this man, Jesus of Nazareth, but they didn't really see who he was. They didn't see or recognize that he was the Messiah. Otherwise, they'd be hanging around with him afterwards like these other guys were, right? And he said, hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. So they heard the words that he spoke, but they didn't get the understanding of what he meant by those words, what the parables represented. Why? Because they didn't ask him. They were there for the show, but they didn't stay around to get the understanding. They could have. These other people did, right? Anybody could have joined in and stayed around, but some did and some didn't, and that made the difference. Verse 14 says, "And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing ye shall hear and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross." It's grown thick. "And their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and should understand with their heart and should be converted, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, they're blessed." That means happy, makarios. "Blessed are your ears, for they hear." You have happy eyes, you have happy ears. "For verily I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which ye see and have not seen them, and to hear those things which ye hear and have not heard them." Why? Because they died first. They knew that the Messiah was coming. These prophets and righteous men throughout the Old Testament times, they knew that the Messiah was coming, and they longed to see him in person and to hear what he would have to say. But they didn't live that long. But they'll get up again, when he raises them all from the dead. And then he explained to them the parable, and I won't get into that right now. But the idea is, it was revealed to those that wanted to know and to those that asked, and to everybody else, it was a secret what it meant. They wouldn't be able to just figure it out. They would only know what it meant if it was revealed to them by Jesus Christ, if it was told to them, right? That's the nature of what the Bible calls a mystery, a secret. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 14. Here's one that talks about mysteries, but it's not talking about the great mystery that we're considering, but it's still interesting. It still uses that word mysterion, but in the plural, and it's regarding speaking in tongues. Verse 1 says, "Follow after charity," or the love of God, "and desire spiritual gifts," is in italics, so desire spiritual things, spiritual matters, "but rather," or more and more, "that you may prophesy," like three of you did this evening. "For he that speaketh in an unknown tongue speaketh not unto men, but unto God. For no man understandeth." The word "him" is in italics, but usually when someone speaks in tongues out loud in a meeting, nobody's going to understand what he says unless it's interpreted, right? So if someone were to just speak in tongues, balalante tiatka kafasata pashante, something like that, you don't understand what that meant unless you happen to know that language that I'm speaking, right? I don't know what it means. So there is a meaning to the words, but the meaning is hidden to the person speaking, and in most cases to the people that are hearing someone speaking in tongues, right? So it says, "He that speaketh in an unknown tongue speaketh not unto men, but unto God, for no man understandeth. Howbeit in the Spirit he speaketh mysteries." And the reasons why it's mysteries is it's not because it's something that could be figured out if you're smart enough, but they're hidden. The meaning of what you're saying is hidden, okay? But he that prophesies speaketh unto men, to edification and exhortation and comfort, because when you prophesy, you speak in the language of the people that are present. Everybody can plainly understand it. And then they receive edification, they receive exhortation, they receive comfort. He that speaketh in an unknown tongue edifieth himself, because you get edified when he's speaking in tongues, even though you don't understand what you're saying. It still edifies you, the action of speaking in tongues. It doesn't benefit your mind other than the fact that you know that you're doing something supernatural and that God is providing the words to say. And you know what the Word of God says about speaking in tongues, makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God, giving thanks well, all the things that we know. But the content of what you're saying is unknown. So he that speaketh in an unknown tongue edifieth himself, but he that prophesieth edifieth the church, because they can hear and understand it. I would that you all spake with tongues, but rather, or even more, that you prophesied. For greater is he that prophesieth than he that speaketh with tongues, except he interpret, that the church may receive edifying. So when you interpret what you had just spoken in tongues, God giving you the words by inspiration, then it makes known what you had spoken in tongues, and then everyone can receive edifying, including yourself. So again, the word mysteries here means that the meaning of what you're saying when you're speaking in tongues is hidden, okay? God hides it from the person speaking. It's not for you to know what you're saying when you're speaking in tongues. You're still edified by the activity of speaking in tongues, but not by the content of the words. They do mean something. Every word means something and makes sense. And you know generally that it's making intercession, giving thanks well, and all those things. But you don't know what's being said. That is a secret. Now, Revelation chapter 1. The word mysterion is used in Revelation a few times. So I'm going to look at one or two of them. In Revelation chapter 1, starting in verse 10, so the Apostle John is writing, saying, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, the day of the Lord, time after the gathering together. And heard behind me a great voice, as of a trumpet, that's pretty loud, saying, I am Alpha and Omega, the first and the last. And what thou seest, write in a book, and send it unto the seven churches which are in Asia, unto Ephesus, and unto Smyrna, and unto Pergamos, and unto Thyatira, and unto Sardis, and unto Philadelphia, and unto Laodicea. So, not the same churches that the epistles of Paul were sent to, are they? And these are churches that will exist after the gathering together. And they will be congregations of people that believe in Jesus Christ at that time. So, verse 12 says, And I turned to see the voice that spake with me, and being turned I saw seven golden candlesticks. And in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot, and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire, and his feet like unto fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace, and his voice as the sound of many waters. And he had in his right hand seven stars, and out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword, and his countenance, his face, was as the sun shineth in his strength. And when I saw him, I fell at his feet as dead. And he laid his right hand upon me, saying unto me, Fear not, I am the first and the last. I am he that liveth and was dead. That explains who he was, right? Jesus Christ, the one who was alive and had been dead. The firstborn from the dead, right? I am he that liveth and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. So far there's only one that fits that category, right? Amen. And have the keys of hell and death. Write the things which thou hast seen, and the things which are, and the things which shall be hereafter. And then he says in verse 20, the mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. So far we don't know what they are, right? We just know that he saw in this vision seven stars that were in the right hand of Jesus Christ, and the seven golden candlesticks. If he didn't explain what they were, all you could do is guess. But guessing doesn't help when it comes to the Word of God, does it? And there's no prize for guessing. If it's not revealed what something means, all you can say is, I don't know. You can say, okay, is this something that was been used before? Like the sharp two-edged sword we saw, I think, in 2 Thessalonians. It talked about Jesus Christ having a sharp two-edged sword. And there might be other places where it talks about the Word of God being like a two-edged sword. So we could probably understand that. But the stars and the candlesticks, we would never know if it's not explained. So he says, the mystery or the secret of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand and the seven golden candlesticks. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. And the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. So now that it is explained, it's no longer a secret. It was a secret back in the previous verses. But by the time you get to verse 20, it's been explained, so it's been revealed. So it's no longer a secret. It's something that had been a secret up until then. Now, let's look at some examples of God hiding and revealing things, okay? We're in the book of Revelation. Let's go to chapter 10. In chapter 10, it says in verse 1, and I saw another mighty angel come down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as pillars of fire. So this follows chapter 9, where it talked about seven angels, and it describes the first six in chapters 8 and 9. It talks about the first six angels. So by the time we get to chapter 10, the last one was the sixth. This is the seventh, okay? This is the seventh angel of this group of angels that happens when these seals are opened of this book. Just to give you a little bit of a context. Verse 2 says, and he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot on the earth, and cried with a loud voice as when a lion roareth. And when he cried, seven thunders uttered their voices. And when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write. He had his pen and paper all ready to write it down. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, seal up those things which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. So what did the seven thunders say? We don't know. We know that they, in the vision, they say something. John heard it in the vision. He was going to write it down, but he was told not to write it down. So the fact that there's something there, but is intentionally not revealed, that makes it a mystery or a secret, okay? That's something that is hidden, something that is there, but that is hidden. And then later on in the chapter, in verse 7, it says, but in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. The mystery of God would refer to this secret, okay, that is being concealed. The seven thunders, whatever they're saying, is a mystery, and it's referred to there. So it's not talking about the great mystery regarding the church in this verse, as maybe someone might think. If they read this and said, oh, same word mystery used in Ephesians chapter 3. No, it's talking about something that was spoken but not written down. So you can't know it until it is finally revealed. Okay? So whenever that will be, then people will be able to know what those seven thunders said. But until then, silenced. Okay? It's hidden. Let's look at one in Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, this has to do with when Jesus Christ was up on this mountain and was transfigured. Peter, James, and John were there. and they saw a vision of Moses and Elijah the prophet talking with Jesus Christ, and a voice from heaven that said, "This is my beloved son, hear ye him." Okay? Just so we don't have to read the whole record. But in verse 36, it says, "And when the voice was passed," the one that said, "This is my beloved son, hear him," Jesus was found alone. Moses and Elijah were not there anymore. It was a vision of them, and the vision was over. And it says, "And they kept it close." And that is a word that is otherwise translated hidden or kept secret. Okay? And it's used regarding the mystery. Romans 16, "Now to him that is of power to establish you according to my gospel and the preaching of Jesus Christ according to the revelation of the mystery, which was kept secret since the world began." Okay? That word secret, sagaio, is used here, and it's translated, they kept it close. They kept it secret. They didn't tell anybody. Okay? It says, "And they kept it close and told no man in those days any of those things which they had seen." So they saw it. They knew what they saw. Jesus Christ was there. But outside of those four people, nobody else knew what happened up on that mountain until later on when it was revealed. In Mark 9, which talks about the same incident, we know why they kept it close, why they kept it a secret. Mark 9, verse 9 says, "And as they came down from the mountain, he," Jesus Christ, "charged them." It means he gave them an order. He charged them that they should tell no man what things they had seen till the Son of Man were risen from the dead. And they kept that saying with themselves, questioning one with another what the rising from the dead should mean. So Peter, James, and John were ordered by Jesus Christ not to tell anybody. There was something to tell, but they were ordered not to tell anybody. Later on, Peter mentions this in 2 Peter, talks about the voice that they heard in the mount. But that was, of course, after Jesus Christ had been raised from the dead. So again, something significant, but kept a secret until the appropriate time. In Luke chapter 10, let's look at that. Luke chapter 10, this is regarding the 70 that Jesus Christ had sent out to preach. He sent them out two by two, and he told them to heal the sick and gave them instructions to preach the gospel. And when they came back, we'll pick it up in verse 17. It says, "And the 70 returned again with joy, saying, Lord, even the devils are subject unto us through thy name. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Behold, I give unto you power to tread on serpents and on scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Notwithstanding in this, rejoice not that the spirits are subject unto you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. In that hour Jesus rejoiced in spirit and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemed good in thy sight." So these 70 that he sent out, they were just recent disciples, people that decided that they wanted to learn from Jesus Christ. And they followed him around and asked him questions about what he was saying, and he explained things to him. And he sent them out and gave them power to heal the sick and cast out devil spirits. And they did it with, they were probably only learning from him for a matter of months. And here they are healing the sick, casting out devils. And they come back and say, "Whoa! Well, the spirits, the devil spirits, they're subject unto us through your name. Wow, what you told us to do, it works." And he said, "Yeah, of course it does." And he just rejoiced that God had chosen these young, simple people that he considered babes. They had just started learning the word from him, and they're doing these things that the wise and the learned one, they never even attempted this stuff. The scholars, the doctors of the law, they're not healing the sick and casting out devils, you know? So God can decide who he wants to reveal things to and who he wants to hide things from, you see? Look at that verse again, where he rejoiced in spirit, verse 21. In that hour, Jesus rejoiced in spirit and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent and hast revealed them unto babes. So he decides who he wants to hide them from. The word hid is apocrypto, which means to conceal away. Apocrypto. The word reveal is apocalypto. That means where the covering is taken away. You know, the curtain is parted, the box is lifted. You can see what's behind it. So God can hide things, he can conceal them away, or he can reveal them to remove the covering. Of course, there has to be something there to start with, right? That's intentionally hidden or intentionally revealed. And it's God's option to do that. In Deuteronomy, let's look at some things in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy 29. I love this verse. Chapter 29, verse 29. And this is Moses talking to the people of Israel, the second generation, just about at the end of those 40 years in the wilderness, where the older generation had died off, except for, you know, Moses is still alive, but he's going to be dying soon. Joshua and Caleb are still alive, and everybody else, they're the children of those that had come out of Egypt. And in verse 29, he says, the secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. God had revealed many things to Moses, some of which it was just God wanted to reveal to him so he could teach the people. There's some things that God revealed to Moses that he didn't tell him to share with anybody else. And there's some things that God revealed to Moses because Moses asked him. He wanted to see God's glory. He wanted to learn more about God on a personal level, and God revealed things to him. And there were other things that God didn't reveal to Moses or anybody else. And Moses knew that there were things that God did not reveal, because he talks about them here. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. The word secret means hidden. It's from a Hebrew word sathar, which means to hide or conceal. And it's used about like people hiding something. Rahab, the harlot, hiding the spies. It talks about God hiding his face from certain people at certain times because they're disobeying him or worshiping other gods. So God says, okay, I'm going to hide my face from you so that if you do happen to ask me to do something for you, I'm not going to listen. And of course, he says he will never do that to us as children. But there were times where, like, the people of Israel would turn away from him, disobey him, and he said, okay, if you're going to depart from me, if you're going to break the covenant, don't expect me to help you out if you're in trouble, okay? Although many times he did anyway. Psalm 107 talks about that, you know, where the people turned away from God and they were suffering the consequences and said they cried unto God in their trouble, and he heard them and he helped them. But there were times where he said, look, I'm going to intentionally ignore you because you're worshiping other gods instead of me. If I were to answer the prayers that you prayed with other gods in mind, you would credit those other gods for doing it for you. Of course, now those other gods cannot answer your prayers. So you're going to be praying for help and not getting any help, because I'm not going to be helping you at that time. And the other gods that you're praying to will not be able to help you because they don't actually exist. They can't do anything. So it's used for that. It's also used when God would hide somebody to protect them. Like Elijah the prophet was hidden by that brook. God sent the ravens to bring him food. So the king of Israel was looking all over the place for him and going to other kingdoms to check and see if Elijah was hiding out there, and he couldn't find him until God told Elijah, go show yourself to the king. So if God hides somebody, they're hidden. Nobody's going to be able to find them. God is very good at hiding things, concealing things. So let's look at something that God said in Genesis 18, and this is regarding Abraham. Go to Genesis 18, and I'm going to start in verse 16. This is when God sent those three angels that Abraham entertained. You know, he fed them. They were angels of God, and he ran out to meet him, said, oh, come, come to the tent. Let me get you some food for you. And while the angels were there, God himself spoke to Abraham. And these men were headed towards Sodom and Gomorrah because God had sent them there. And we'll pick it up in verse 16. It says, "And the men rose up from thence and looked towards Sodom. And Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do?" So it was God's option. He could have hidden it from him, right? Or he could reveal it to him. So the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." And the Lord said, he spoke to Abraham now, "Because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me, and if not, I will know it." So God told Abraham, look, I'm hearing terrible things about Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, who's there? Lot's there. Mm-hmm. Who's praying to God? Lot's praying to God, right? So God's hearing how awful things are there, says, I'm going to send some angels down to check it out. And then Abraham, knowing that Lot is in Sodom, he negotiates with God to try to save the place if there's only 50 righteous there, and he whittles it down to 10. You know the story. But anyway, I just want to bring up that it was God's prerogative or his choice to either reveal or to hide from Abraham what he was going to do, and he decided not to hide it, but to reveal it to him, to let him know. Now, in Genesis 27, this is another record that everyone's familiar with Isaac when he had become old and lost his sight, and he wanted to bless his son Esau. And his wife Rebekah heard that he was going to do that, and she told her son Jacob to go disguise as Esau, wear his clothes, pretend he's Esau to get the blessing. Jacob really did not want to do this, but his mother insisted that she obey him and do that. So Jacob brings a meal that his mother prepared as if it was Esau, with the meal from something he'd gotten from hunting. And Isaac said, "Are you Esau? Sounds a lot like Jacob." And he said, No, I'm Esau. Probably tried to imitate Esau's voice after that point. And he was wearing Esau's clothes, and he put some goat skins on his hand because Esau was like, had so much hair, he was like furry, where Jacob was had smooth skin. So he convinced his dad that it was Esau, and then Isaac blessed him. And the blessing was from God, because it says in Hebrews 11, it's by faith that Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. But let's pick this up in verse 30, when Esau shows up. It says, "And it came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, and Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And he also had made savory meat, and brought it unto his father, and said unto his father, Let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac his father said unto him, Who art thou? Who are you? He said, I'm thy son, thy firstborn Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly, and said, Who? Where is he that hath taken venison, brought it me, and I have eaten of all before thou camest, and have blessed him? Yea, and he shall be blessed." Why did he say that? Because the blessing came from God, right? He was speaking for God when he blessed him. Well, let me ask you a question. If God gave him the revelation for the blessing, why did God not reveal to him that it was Jacob? Yeah, the blessing belonged to Jacob. God hid it from Isaac that it was really Jacob. He didn't tell him. He gave him the words for the blessing, but he didn't give him the information that this was Jacob and not Esau. You see? That's why he was so shocked. He said, "Yea, and he shall be blessed." He knew that he was speaking for God when he blessed him, but God hid it from him. Remember, previous to this, Esau had sold his birthright to Jacob, and Jacob made him swear, and he swore. So he made an oath before God, I'm giving you my birthright in exchange for this bowl of lentil bean soup. He sold it to him. God honored the transaction. Jacob had to have that blessing. Anyway, God did not reveal that to Isaac. Now, farther down the road, let's go to Genesis 46. Jacob himself had something hidden from him. Remember, Jacob sent his son Joseph to check up on his brothers, and his brothers saw him coming, said, oh, this is the guy that's dreaming the dreams and thinks he's going to be reigning over us someday. And they conspired to kill him, but one of the brothers convinced them, let's not kill him. Let's sell him, you know, as like a slave, and we'll keep the money. He'll be out of our hair. And they took his coat off of him, this coat of many colors, and they dipped it in blood and tore it. And they brought it back to Jacob, and they said, we found this coat out in the field. Do you recognize it? They didn't say, this is Joseph's coat. They just brought the coat to Jacob, and they said, do you recognize this coat that we found? And Jacob saw it, obviously, Joseph's coat, torn and covered with blood. And he just came to the conclusion, oh, he got, you know, torn by a lion or something like that. And his son was dead. And he mourned for him for years. I think he was 17 years old, I think, when he was sold as a slave. And he was like 30-something. So for years, Jacob mourned for his son. He grieved for his son. In chapter 46, and this is after Joseph reveals himself to his brothers when he's like the ruler of Egypt, second to Pharaoh, and sends his brothers back to bring his father and the rest of the family down to Egypt. And at first, Jacob, he didn't believe it. His son said, Joseph's alive, he's in Egypt, he's running the place. And he didn't believe it. But then he saw the Egyptian chariots, and then God talked to him. In 46 verse 1, says, and Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac. And God spake unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. And I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. So God is telling him now that Joseph is indeed there, and it's safe for you to go down there, and I'll take care of you, and I'll fulfill everything that I promised. But why did God not reveal to Jacob when it happened that Joseph was not really dead? He could have. Jacob had the capacity to receive revelation. He had received revelation at other times, had visions from God. He had spoken to God. God had spoken to him. But God did not tell him that Joseph was alive until now. The reason why is it was part of God's plan to save the family because of the famine that was coming. If Jacob had known that Joseph was in Egypt, he would have gone to get him right away. But that would have kind of spoiled the whole plan. If he had gone to get Joseph while he was a slave in Potiphar's house, the family would not have been saved, you see? Because remember, Joseph told his brothers that look, you did evil by trying to kill me and then selling me as a slave, but don't be angry at yourselves because it was God that sent me to preserve life and to bring this great deliverance as it is this day. So anyway, God hid this from Jacob until he was ready to reveal it to him. But there's a few other things where I want to look at with you regarding God hiding things from somebody and revealing things to somebody. And we'll look at that next week and then get into more of how God defines this mystery that he revealed to the Apostle Paul and others. And we'll look into more detail about that. But first I want to pay more attention to the idea that God can reveal or hide. It's his prerogative, and he can do it very well. If he hides something, nobody's going to know. If he reveals it, then it's known to the people that he reveals it to, okay? Even if something has been made known to somebody, he could still hide it from others. So we'll see that God's able to do this, and that will give us a greater appreciation of the mystery that was revealed that has to do with us. Okay, so that's all for tonight.